Well, good evening and welcome once again to Crystal Silence League Radio, brought to you by LMC Radio Network. It's a beautiful day here where I live, and I hope the same applies to where you live. This is Reverend Dr. John St. Germain. I'm very excited with the program we have. A monumental course of programming on chakras and crystals. We'll also be covering meditation techniques. Thanks for tuning in. I'm sorry we weren't here last week. I have issues involving my recent rotator cuff surgery. I'm delighted to say that I'm mobile now. My arm is free of its restrictions, and I have limited mobility with it, but at least I'm not strapped into it like 50% of a straitjacket. Our material this week, we will be covering chakras. What are they? Why should I care? And crystals, and how working with the chakras can enhance our crystal ball work and our work with crystals. So grab your crystal balls, grab your crystal stones, grab your crystal points, go out and drive and grab a piece of gravel if you like, get a shiny object of some sort, and do return. I think you'll find this program of tremendous interest. So we'll be right back. St. Germain, coming from the lovely studios of LMC Radio Network, and gosh, it's exciting here. We have a huge studio audience who are just on the edge of their seats waiting to hear what we have for you today. As some of you may know and some of you may not know, Crystal Silence League was founded around 1917 by Mr. Claude Conlon with the purpose of spreading prayer and positive affirmation for those in need. This is done through crystal balls. Those who are members of the Crystal Silence League have crystal balls and instructions on how to use them, and pastors of the Crystal Silence League, among whose number I am, three times a day project positive prayer and affirmation, and members of the Crystal Silence League both project and receive these affirmations. When Mr. Conlon passed away, the Crystal Silence League went with him until a few years ago, adepts of the Independent Missionary Independent Spiritual Church revived it online, www.crystalsilenceleague.org, where everyone is free to go post prayer. Prayer is always free at Crystal Silence League. Of course, you can also become a member, and membership has its benefits. You receive literature. Also free is subscription to our newsletter. We have, 25,000 subscribers at this point. It's an email newsletter, and I'm the editor of that, and it's filled chock full of useful information. So I'm currently working on a book. I'm 5,000 words into it at this point for the Crystal Silence League on working with crystals and crystal balls. So what I like to do every week is print out some of the many thousands of prayers we get every week and read some of these online. It helps give you an idea of what we get online, and also it sends out positive affirmation in the tradition of Mr. Conlon. So let's do that right now, and you may send these folks positive affirmations along with me. And I only identify these prayers by name, by prayer IDs and initials. So there's a number and initials. Even though people post these online, they may not wish me to announce it to the hundreds of thousands of radio listeners. So here we go. We have prayer ID number 37983. This is LJ, and he He prays for help with his blood sugar issue, and he thanks those who have prayed for him in the past. And he wants to be blessed with knowledge, riches, and he wants the right helpmate in his life. May this happen for him. I'm glad he's continuing to improve. Prayer ID number 37982AG. He prays to heal and protect the traumatized people of Nepal. He says, may we join our forces to pray together that the people of Nepal find relief from pain. Oh my gosh, isn't that true? They've been in trouble for a long time at the hands of the junta. Prayer ID number 37981VC needs help with a court case. Says that she's being harassed by bill collectors and needs help with some legal action against them. Prayer ID number 37980VC again needs help with her autistic son. May he be helped and healed, and may she be helped with her situation. Prayer ID number 37979 needs help for a medical situation in her home. And prayer ID number 37978CA. Apparently, there's a problem with cats being abducted in the neighborhood, and may that situation be helped. There's apparently cats are being abducted and driven away and abandoned. This is a terrible situation. I hope the culprits are caught and punished. Prayer ID number 37977DL needs prayers for prosperity, abundance, and success. May she achieve that, work for it, and may she achieve it. Prayer ID number 37976AL prays that her parents find spirituality and that she be protected. Prayer ID number 37975MM needs that FN's situation changes for the better so that their relationship can progress. Prayer ID number 37974NS needs removes of P from her partner's life. Apparently there's interference in the relationship. Prayer ID number 37973 prays for reconciliation in her relationship. Prayer number 37972 is S, needs to have an enemy removed from his life, interfering with his life. Prayer ID number 37971SH needs a financial breakthrough. Prayer ID number 37970NS needs removal of obstacles and curses for her friend D. And prayer ID number 37968 needs a prayer for herself and her friend E that their relationship improves. And we have prayer number 37964SS needs to pray for her friend P. He needs friendship and needs to be closer to God. Prayer ID number 37963 needs help in the middle of a powerful project in which she is in the middle of. And we have prayer ID number 37962CG. Is having a spiritual battle with profession. May she be uplifted and may she be made strong. And we have prayer ID number 37961, having trouble at work. May that situation be reconciled. And prayer ID number 37959 is praying for a friend S to be relieved from stress and that he'll get okay and get answers to his questions. And finally, prayer ID number 37958 prays that his dog P will continue to get better. His dog was diagnosed with diabetic ketoacidosis and was ill, getting insulin shots now, and better but not normal. So please may KH's dog get better. And that's a good place to end, I think. All dogs go to heaven, they say, and this dog seems to be like a good dog. May he get better. May these prayers come true. May the people be blessed. May positive affirmations be spread among those who need them. That's the purpose of the Crystal Silence League. Everybody take just a moment of quiet meditation. for those who need positive affirmations. Crystal of the week. We always examine in depth one crystal, well, as in depth as you can in about a minute. Our crystal this week is fire agate, and I've been very fascinated with the stone. A lot of them come from Mexico, and fire agate is a variety of chalcedony, which of course is a mineral that falls in the quartz family, and it's a beautiful stone. You can see a picture of it on our slideshow. It's a translucent, deep reddish brown. There's a spectrum there. Sometimes they're light reddish brown, sometimes very dark. When you hold it up to a light, it has flashes of orange and red and green and gold and sometimes of blue that dance in there like little fires, like there's fires inside it, and they make jewelry out of it. It's very pretty. These iridescent colors are very pretty. There's iron oxide and limonite crystals within the chalcedony. This activates on the root chakra, so it helps you feel fully grounded, very aware. It sets you on fire. It gives you energy. It gives you the strength to do what needs doing. It's known as a stabilizing and strengthening influence. It gives you the steady, vibrant energy. It gives you a zest for living. It helps you with creativity and sexuality. It can stimulate sexual energy. It gives you stamina and circulation. It can help you with both hypersexuality and hyposexuality. If you're oversexed or undersexed, it can balance any of that. It can help you with impotence. It can help you with fear of sexual intimacy. It's helpful in overcoming creative blocks. If you feel that you just can't get off the ground creatively, it helps you. It's a protective stone in conjunction with other stones. It can help you, but since it is the root chakra, these are your instinctive drives. It can help you with gaining financial security, so it's good with ambition. It's presumably good for inner stability. It helps you with your security and self-confidence. Remember, the root chakra is all about your instinctive drives. Now, it can also help you regulate an over abundance of desire for things you don't need. So if you're, if you're a compulsive shopper, or you're a womanizer, or a what's the opposite of a womanizer? A manizer. Your desires are out of control. This can help you with work and getting, dialing that back a little bit. Now, an interesting thing about it is it deflects negative energy that's thrown at you. It helps you put your shields up and send it back, and it sends it right back to the person that sent it to you, so it's great in mirroring or reflection spells. And it helps you generally with centering in general. So that's fire agate for you, a very interesting stone, and we're going to be talking more about that as we talk about the chakras. And the chakra is a very interesting topic. This is part one of a series, which may be voluminous, on discussing the relationship between crystals and chakra and our work with crystal balls and crystals and how it relates to the four branches of Mr. Conlon's work. It's a monumental task to pull all that together, and it's the focus of the book I'm working on, how all this works. And so we're going to talk about meditation in there somewhere as well. So let's start with crystals, first of all. We discussed how crystals are formed at one point, but let's lay some ground rules about crystals. Let's recoup some of that. So let's go to the beginning. In the very beginning, there was nothing. And I mean nothing, not even vacuum. Vacuum requires space to exist, and in the beginning it wasn't even space. There wasn't even really a beginning, because beginning implies time, and without space you can't have time, just ask Einstein. So there was nothing. There was nothing. Then along comes consciousness, and consciousness observed, and observation brings about matter, and then there was an expansion, and matter was flung everywhere in all directions. And some of this matter condensed into stars and planets. Now, there's another version of this story told a little bit more poetically in Genesis. And my version seems more universal and also more appropriate to a story about crystals. But some of that matter that was flung about eventually condensed into the Earth. And that's our Earth, on which we live and dream and die. And on that Earth, eventually we came along and we started digging in the ground, probably looking for something to eat, and we found all these magic rocks, different colors, shapes, sizes. And this is a wonderful thing because, you know, a lot of planets just condense into a big homogeneous blob of nothing, stone, like a big piece of gravel. But our Earth had so many different restless geological forces going on that all these nearly infinite variety of mineral compounds, all shapes and colors and sizes and specific gravities and densities and characteristics, came into being. And since ancient times, all those magical rocks have been used to heal and to hurt, to work magic, to create beautiful jewelry, create art, all sorts of things. So these crystals are born through these geological forces that are constantly going on within the planet's interior. And crystals are formed depending on the pressure, speed of cooling, materials in the molten compound, and many other factors. And they grow in a lot of different forms. Some are clear, some semi-transparent, some completely opaque, and every color imaginable. A question that a lot of people ask me is, and ask everybody, I guess, what's the difference between a crystal and a stone? And those who work with crystals usually sometimes use the terms interchangeably, stones, gemstones, crystals. A lot of people just call them stones. You know, people call diamond stones and gemstones. So often crystal workers will call all their tools stones, even healing stones, calcite, sodalite, turquoise, lapis lazuli. They're still called crystals even though they're stones. And that's just for convenience. It's like when you call all carbonated beverages colas, even though not all of them have a cola-based recipe. But there's a difference. There's a difference. The difference is this. Crystals grow in a repeating pattern that are called tessellations around a nucleus, usually, while stones are just an amalgam of minerals melted together. You know, imagine if you just threw a whole bunch of crayons in a pot and melted them together and stirred them up, and you just get this kind of muddy mixture. That's a stone. But crystals have a repeating pattern, like if you look through a kaleidoscope. That's a tessellated pattern, and that's how crystals grow. And this symmetrical pattern is easily seen in the larger crystals like quartz or fluorite or pyrite. There are some crystals that have micro crystals like aventurine, and that's a very tiny crystalline pattern. You have to look through a microscope to see it. So sometimes it looks like a stone, but it's really a crystal. Now, crystals also, here's another rule, crystals are not organic. So amber, even though it's used in crystal healing, is not a crystal, nor is it a stone, because it's organic. It's tree sap. Coral is not organic, but some people consider it a stone because coral is pure calcium carbonate. Others do not see it as a crystal or a stone because the same reason as amber. It's a product of a living being, not geological processes. I don't see it as a stone or a crystal. It's coral. It's, you know, it's produced by, you know, these little bugs. So we have obsidian, which is a very potent magical tool. It's lava glass. So it isn't crystal, because due to the way it's made, it doesn't have time to crystallize. It cools too fast. Glass is the same way. It's not a crystal, nor is it really a stone. Obsidian and glass is fused silicon dioxide. So this is classed scientifically as a mineraloid, and that's another story. We won't even go into that. But it's neither crystal nor glass, but we call it a crystal. You know, it's a healing crystal. So the characteristics of crystals used for healing are basically they're solid, not liquid, at normal temperatures. So mercury isn't a crystal, but it's been used in spell work before. Non-organic. It's naturally occurring, not man-made, so we don't use cubic zirconians, for instance, in crystal healing. I know some people do, but generally speaking, it doesn't come from the earth. So what does it do? Its structure consists of a repeating pattern called tessellations. Now, stones, it's usually not that big a deal. Stones tend to look like stones. You know, green moss agate couldn't be mistaken for a crystal. Now, there are exceptions, like aventurine, but stones are one or more minerals melted together with no crystalline pattern. They tend to be roundish or lumpish, and they lack geometrical shape. Some of the common stones used for healing are calcite, sodalite, turquoise, agate, jet, tiger's eye, unakite, and lapis lazuli. Very easy to spot. Crystal workers use a lot of terms, specialized terms, talking about their craft. As we said, stones can refer to both crystals and stones as well as gemstones. Crystal can also be used interchangeably with stone. Points are crystals that form natural points, such as quartz, tourmaline, aqua aura, fuchsite, heliodor, lithium, and citrine. Tumbles are stones that have been polished through the tumbling process. There's a term that it's a personal bug in my ear, cleansing. Cleansing is a word you didn't hear until around the late 1980s. Before then, the term was discharging. This means that to discharge the negative or dark energies your stones have absorbed during your healing sessions. And there's a lot of different ways to cleanse stones. We talked about it before. We won't talk about it now. A lot of times you just lay them out in the sun, and they discharge their energy. Cleansing a stone is kind of funny to me. It's like trying to sweep dirt, but you know, people would say, I'm going to go cleanse my stones, and I'd say, are you going to use Ajax or Bon Ami? You know, I used to kind of make fun of that. So we also, in our work, use crystal balls, and just as certain crystals and stones lend themselves to specific conditions, so do tinted crystal balls. Clear crystal is a universal sender and receiver. Aqua or blue crystal is employed in health and tranquility and spirituality and peace. Red crystals for love and sex. Green crystals for working with money and business matters. And yellow, honey amber, or purple crystal balls are employed to work with success in career and personal power. Black crystals used to absorb negativity and evil spirits. Now, these are crystal balls. There's a lot of very useful things to know about crystals. That we should know in crystals and stones. Crystals have personalities, not in a living sense, but when you work with them, you find each crystal has its own unique personality. You know, sunstone, when you work with it, has a sort of open, honest, vibrant feel to it. Obsidian is contemplative and mysterious and introverted. And like cats, even within the species, every stone is different. No two pieces of rose quartz are the same. That's why it's important to select your toolkit carefully. Some stones may feel better to you than others. You'll connect with one piece of quartz while another does nothing for you. So if possible, you should go to a rock shop where there's piles of stones, and you can handle it and find one that resonates with you. Selecting a stone is a lot like adopting a cat. You know, it selects you as much as you select it. Some will just feel better to you than others, and you may find that you have a natural affinity for certain crystals and stones. Many people like to work with their birthstones or stones associated with certain planets. Rocks and crystals, though, really are, in a sense, living things. Not in the sense that you and I are, but they're birthed by the living earth. Crystals will respond to touch, and they remember your touch. That's why we can work such powerful magic using rocks and crystals. So it's very important to enter a respectful relationship with your magical tools, and stones are included with that. Orange stones will have a different feel to you or personality than blue or green stones, for example. And over time, you can even learn, in a row of four identical blue stones, you can learn to tell the difference between them just by the sense of touch, because there's a memory stored within them. So there are procedures to learn to connect with your stone library, your stone collection. You hold it in your hand and you curl your fingers around it and you take deep breaths and you center your thoughts into the stone and you feel for its energy center or its energy signature, and it'll begin to warm to your touch. Some people feel a low throbbing, and you speak to the stone, preferably silently. You know, if you do it out loud, you know, if you go around talking to stones out loud, people may not understand. And you ask it for assistance, and you listen for a response. Now, it's not going to answer you in words, but there'll be feelings or images, and there'll be a click, there'll be a connection, and you come together. And crystals have memory, and this is one of the oldest and best-known principles of mineral magic. The most common example of this principle is working with salt. Salt is blessed by magicians, cursed by spell workers, it's prayed over, it's used for protection and cleansing. All manners of spells are worked with salt. Salt remembers what's done to it, and wax is the same. What you put into wax sticks to wax, but, you know, that's another story. Another example is the use in spell work of lodestones to attract love or money. Once a lodestone is used for specific purposes, and it's completed its task you requested of it, it's advised to retire the lodestone by burying it in the earth. The memory of lodestone is so pernicious and so persistent, you really can't use it again in a magic spell. If you've assigned identities to two lodestones in a love spell, you really can't use it for another two people. You've got to give it to the people or bury it in the earth. You can't erase the identity from it. You can't erase it once you've trained those lodestones to think of themselves as Bob and Jane. You can't just say, okay, now you're Billy and LaWanda. You can't do that. You'll find it just doesn't work. I know people who do, but, you know, they're not as successful. Some people cleanse the stones in running water or with whiskey and stuff and reuse them. You're better off just buying a big lot of lodestones and matching them up and not doing that. You know, give the stones to the people you're doing the work for or bury them. The memory of lodestones, it's a very sticky memory. And salt does too. The salt remembers it, but all crystals have that quality of memory. The crystals have learned vibratory resonances, which give them their qualities. That's why they have it. They've learned it. And we activate these resonances by bringing them near an energy source, such as a living being. Then the crystal or stone can realign or project or tune or dissipate these harmful or unwholesome spiritual energies, or they can help with the spell work. Crystals can be trained, and the more you use them, the better trained they become. They remember people, and they can become, in a manner of speaking, attached to specific persons. If you carry a touchstone for a long time and then give it to someone, the stone may not work as well for them. It's become attuned to you. It remembers you, in a sense. I know this is anthropomorphizing an inanimate object. It's a specious practice to do that, to develop feelings or to anthropomorphize various objects. But nonetheless, when you start working with magical tools, you're doing spirit work. And when you're doing spirit work, you realize that, like it says in the Bible, the rocks and stones will sing your name. And your crystal balls, you know, anybody knows this. If you work with a deck of cards long enough, they begin to take on spiritual energy. And if you work with stones and crystals, they begin to take on a life of their own. I mean, is a mojo bag alive? Is it? You know, if you do it right, it is. So professional crystal workers have learned to discharge their stones and crystals often, especially after particularly difficult healing. And I've known a lot of crystal workers who will retire some stones if they feel they've absorbed too much emotional energy. If they've worked with a particularly traumatized person, they'll take their stone and bury it. You know, they'll say that stone's ruined. You know, it's too traumatized. It's ruined, and they'll cleanse it and they'll bury it in the earth. You know, and put it back in the ground, you know, where it can retire and, you know, give it a good retirement. Another principle: crystals sometimes work better when heterodyned with other crystals. let me give you some examples. If you're performing a money attraction around malachite, you may include citrine for business success and aventurine for luck. These are just one example. So when you're working with crystals, just remember that there are some rules, but there's also rules that you may not necessarily have to follow. You know, like with people, you learn to work within the rules. You just don't put a big pile of crystals, you know, and say, okay, crystals, go to work for me. Now, how does this relate to the chakras? Put the crystal information aside for a minute. Now, let's look at chakras. Chakras are energy vortexes located along the central channel of the etheric body. The etheric body is a duplicate of the physical body that is superimposed upon the body. It's a spiritual body. The chakra, or chakra, literally means circle or wheel or vortex. And in Asian languages, words are very subtle. Chakra also means cycle, as in the cycle of death and rebirth, the cycle of breath, the cycle of the turning of the vortex, the cycle of the circle of people who study. It's got a lot of hidden meanings. And it's usually depicted in pictures as a round object with many petals. And in all the different schools of legitimate traditional chakra theory, it's almost always depicted as a round object with petals. In Tibetan Buddhism, the circle has a dual meaning. The practitioner also reflects on the circle of existence and rebirth. Now, Tibetan Buddhism has some very interesting beliefs about chakras in practice. Now, depending on the system, there can be as many as several thousand chakras or as few as three. And regardless of all this disparity, regarding the number of chakras contained within the etheric or the subtle body, almost all the schools agree that the chakras exhibit certain commonalities. Chakras are energy pools or vortexes. They have petals. They're located along the central axis or channel of the body. Chakras are usually associated with mantras. They usually have a seed or fire, and chakras can be experienced, controlled, and developed with practice. Chakras have been associated with colors, psychological traits, emotional qualities, and very conveniently for us, classical elements. What are the chakras? What are they for? Well, that's very complex. One of its functions seems to be to help filter how we experience the world, and maybe the chakras even store our responses to these various experiences. If the chakra is truly an energy vortex, then it's a powerful whirlpool that sucks in emotional energy from our environment and does not allow it to escape, which could explain why we harbor positive and unfortunately negative emotions for a long time after a powerful experience. So just imagine this whirlpool, for instance, over your heart, and it's inside. In fact, the channel, the central channel on which the chakras are located, In many or most schools, runs along the spinal column. It starts at the base of the spinal column around the sacral bone and goes up to the top of the head. And the classical tradition coming from the yogic tradition in Western culture is seven chakras, although we're going to discuss as many as 10. And imagine that going out from there is a whirlpool, just like when you pull the plug on your sink, there's a whirlpool or a tornado. And it comes out in both directions, front and back. And this is sucking things in. And this is an energy vortex, and it sucks in energy. It sucks in reality. It sucks in emotion. It sucks in spiritual energy. Whatever happens to come by, it goes, sucks it in. Just like if you know, when you're doing the dishes and you pull the plug and all that dirty water goes down the drain. That's what the chakra is doing. It's spinning and sucking that energy in. So the energy it's sucking in is reality. It's experiential reality. It's what you experience. So every chakra has a different function. Every chakra has a different function. And so We'll examine those functions in a minute and see just what happens. Another function of the chakra is that it may act as a gate, allowing certain types of experiential energies into our awareness according to the chakra's specific function. For example, if someone had a low-functioning or blocked heart chakra, they may have difficulty experiencing or even being aware of love. And someone with a blocked root chakra might seem lost and unable to fend for themselves. In reality, just the whole the hierarchy of needs, the whole idea of finance, of survival, is just baffling to them. And we'll take a closer look at that in just a minute. Now, Western yogic tradition, which evolved from Hindu yoga, identifies 7 chakras and associates each chakra with a specific color. And the 7 chakras are located in alignment from the base of the spine to the top of the head. And we'll just discuss those now. The root chakra is located at the base of the spine and represents sexual drive, the sense of being grounded or rooted. And it's believed in many of the schools, including the one predominant in America now, that issues involving instinctive needs, sex, basic survival, financial security, obtaining food and shelter, issues of autonomy are seated in the root chakra. The second one going up is the sacral chakra. It's located just below the navel and is related to the sense of connection to other people, anger, violence, creativity, willingness to embrace new people and new experiences. Then going up is the solar plexus chakra, and that's located in the pit of the stomach, related to confidence and self-esteem. Then you go up to the heart chakra, and it's located in the middle of the chest, right where your heart is, related to the capacity for love, compassion, empathy. Now, in Tibetan Buddhism, that's a very important chakra. It's believed this chakra carries our consciousness into the next existence. You cultivate a flame in there. That's the flame. You cultivate the heart flame. The throat chakra is located in the throat and is related to communication, self-expression, the ability to express truth. It's also very important in balancing the heart and the head chakra. Talk about that in a little bit. The third eye chakra is located on the forehead. It's centrally located just above and between your eyes. You hear about that a lot. It's mocked quite a bit and referred to quite a bit. The third eye chakra is related to psychism, intellectual activities, focus, connecting the dots, clarity, wisdom, imagination, decision-making. At the very top of the head is the crown chakra. It's the spiritual focus of the sense of beauty, illumination, transcendence, enlightenment, all your higher wisdom and spirituality. Now, that's the 7 chakras that you're going to hear about mostly. Now, there are 3 other chakras that some practitioners recognize. These are located outside the body. There's the soul chakra, located just above the head, and that's the connection to creation, nature, and the creator. And above that is this very strange chakra. It's called the spirit chakra. This is a universal chakra shared by everybody. It's located outside of time and space and can only be attained by ascending to the highest levels of consciousness. It's union with the Godhead. There's only one spirit chakra. Whereas everybody has their own chakras. Like I have a heart chakra, you have a heart chakra. Joe Smith has a heart chakra. There's only one spirit chakra that everyone connects to. Imagine it's the hub of the wheel, and we're all the spokes, if that makes sense to you. The earth chakra is located below the feet and connects to the earth itself. So that's the connection to the earth. Its purpose is to ground you. It discharges excess energy, stabilize, and draw determination. Now, I'm going to tell you that sounds a lot like the root chakra in some other traditions. So, be that as it may, I think if I were going to think about the earth chakra, I would think in terms of dream time, driving into the earth and going into dream time. But, I don't know. Now, there are hundreds of secondary chakras found throughout the body, but I think for most purposes, you can limit your attention to 7 chakras, and you can work on those other 3 as you like. and how to use the chakras, how to incorporate the chakras to enhance your work with crystals and crystal balls by nurturing these conditions, the energy field conditions. So as we know, there are different arrays of crystals believed to harmonize with these chakras. Since each chakra is believed to harmonize a different wavelength of color, you can see how this is very interesting to people who practice with tinted crystal balls. Because if you go from the top of the head down, the general rule would be that the higher you go up, the higher the vibration of the crystal. And so that would be a very, very easy rule of thumb, because you're working with, when you're working with crystals, some are higher vibration than others. So in a pinch, if you don't have selenite, work with the highest vibration you have, such as amethyst. So for the earth chakra, you would use black and brown stones. Obsidian, ox, lodestone, magnetite, and you would work with a black crystal ball. Very easy rule. For the root chakra, you're using red and black stones. Remember, you're dealing with issues of desire with the root chakra. So you use ruby, red jasper, ox, obsidian, fire agate. Remember fire agate? And you work with a red crystal ball. For your sacral chakra, use orange stones, such as carnelian, jasper, tiger's eye, and you work with an amber or orange crystal ball. For your solar plexus, see, there's a different set of rules for crystal ball with the chakras than there are with the projection work earlier. A little different set of rules, because we're going to use this later on, different. Solar plexus chakra, use yellow stones, such as heliodor, sunstone, citrine, and you work with a yellow or amber crystal ball. The heart chakra, you use green and pink stones, such as jade, moss agate, rose quartz, and you work with a pink crystal ball. And your throat chakra, you use blue crystals, such as lapis lazuli or sodalite, and you work with a blue crystal ball. Your third eye chakra, you use purple and indigo, such as purple kyanite. Kyanite comes in all shades. You can use kyanite for all of these. It comes in all shades. You can easily find purple kyanite and indigo kyanite, and you work with an indigo crystal ball. The crown chakra, you use violet and white stones, such as amethyst. Amethyst has purple, has violet and white in it. Work with a violet or amethyst crystal ball. You can get these crystal balls in every color. Your soul chakra, white crystals such as selenite and calcite. Work with a clear crystal ball. And the spirit chakra, you'd work with clear crystals such as quartz or rock crystal, and you work with a clear crystal ball. This unification of chakra, crystals, and crystal ball will give you superpowers in the magical realm that make the X-Men look like Alvin and the Chipmunks. And remember, when in doubt what stones to use, there's a simple rule. From the heart chakra up, you want to use high vibration stones. From the heart chakra down, you use the lower vibration stones. Now, working with chakras is very interesting, and there are many traditions of chakra work. Most of them involve meditation, and there's many different types of meditation. I want to talk to you about some of these different models. I want to talk to you first about the model of chakras that we discussed. There are from the Hindu tradition that was originally brought, I guess, to America by the Theosophists, and some of the early writers, the Hindu tantric tradition. This is the model that's practiced in Kundalini yoga too. I want to tell you a little bit about the Buddhist tantric tradition, especially Tantra, Buddhist or Tibetan dream yoga. Chakras play a very important role in Indian Vajrayana Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism mainly. an attempt is made in this to bring the energies of the body into balance and realize this emptiness that's called sunyata and attain Buddhahood through balancing the chakras. In the Vajrayana system, it's believed that the central channel begins at the point of the third eye, the middle of your forehead, curves up to the crown of the head, and then goes straight down to the lower body. In other words, the central channel, instead of being from the root to the third eye, curves like a cane, like a handy cane, from your third eye around the back of your head and down. Then there are two other channels which start at your nostrils and travel down to the lower body. That's quite complex. Now, one of those ends at the rectum, and the other one ends in the urinary tract. And these lower channels also have minor chakras in them. And they run parallel to the central channel. And then they have knots in them. Those side channels run parallel except at the location of the navel, heart, throat, and crown chakras, where they knot, they twist around the central channel. There are these knots that twist around, and part of your work is to unknot that. And these knots are very complex, like Gordian knots, and part of your work is to unknot, to loosen and undo those knots. Now, within these chakras, there's a subtle drop. There's a white drop in the crown, a red drop in the navel. The heart has a combination. It's an indestructible red and white drop, which leaves the body at the time of death. Each chakra has a number of petals, which branch off into thousands of different little channels of energy run to every part of the body. Now, by focusing on specific chakras, these subtle energies enter the central channel. And in Tibetan dream yoga meditation, you hold your breath for long periods of time. You hold your breath and go, and you focus your energies into specific chakras. So there's an inner fire meditation where you focus on the chakra just below your belly, the sacral chakra. You focus just below your belly and you hold your breath and you go, and you try to light that inner fire. You meditate on the heart chakra for realizing clear light meditation. Meditating on the throat chakra develops lucid dreaming and the practice of dream yoga. And, you know, those of you who've experimented with drugs and hallucinogenics, you like to get high and eat mushrooms and stuff, man, you don't know anything until you've had somebody work with you with Tibetan dream yoga. You want some freaky stuff? Tibetan dream yoga, that's the stuff. Meditating on the crown chakra, you do consciousness projection, such as out-of-body stuff. You go into other worlds, into someone else's body, see through their eyes, do all kinds of stuff there. I've never done that. I know people who said they have. And I had two friends who tested it. You know, one would put objects on a table and the other person would try to describe them, and according to them, they had results with it. If the chakras are imbalanced, there's a continuous feeling of dissatisfaction. This is one of the sources of suffering, this dissatisfaction. If the heart chakra is out of balance, you lose touch with people. You lose touch with the feelings, your feelings and your sensations. And that's why you're dissatisfied. You just don't really feel correct. You know, your feelings, you're out of touch with your feelings. And so you look outside for fulfillment. You can't find happiness inside. You look outside. When you live in your heads, when you intellectualize your feelings, feelings are secondary. And when you live in the past, you're not living in the present. Everything's out of balance. So if you don't nurture your heart, you get this anxiety, which results in the self reaching out for experience. So the throat chakra attempts to balance evenly the head and the heart chakra, and then you can truly realize contact. You join the head and the heart. This is Tibetan Tibetan yoga is really interesting. It's a different point of view. I remember back when the incorrectly titled, people call it the Tibetan Book of the Dead, used to be really big among the hippies and among his hippies, and people were practicing from that quite a bit. And practicing a lot of the yoga that's in that, and that was really, really big. The Tibetan Book of the Dead, that's not what it's called. It's called the Bardo Tholdal, Bardo Tholdal, and which is a which means the great text of the Bardo. It's how to conduct yourself in the afterlife when the book of the in-between. The Bardo means in-between. It's the great book of understanding the in-between state. The in-between is where you go when you die, and you're in the Bardo for up to 40 days before you're reborn into another body. And this tells you how to conduct yourself, because it's a very confusing thing to be without a body. And so the it was never called the Book of the Dead, though. It's the book of understanding the in between, and back in my hippie days, we studied that with great intensity and practiced dream yoga and all this other stuff. It was extremely important to us, and a lot of gurus with feet of clay use the. The Bardo Tholdal quite a bit to do that. Also in Tibetan yoga, there's a seed syllable attached to every chakra, which is a mantra. And this is kind of a password or a keyword that evokes that chakra and opens it up. And so the... You use a combination of meditation and mantra and yogic practice to open up the potentialities of these chakras. It may sound quite a bit like Kundalini yoga, but it's in practice quite different. You do raise the energy through the chakras, but you're doing it through a different type of energy. Now, that does bring us to Kundalini yoga. How much time do we have? 7 minutes. Kundalini yoga is a very interesting thing. Back in the hippie days, popularity of Eastern culture swept into Western consciousness, and droves of individuals began studying meditation techniques. I'm talking about, in my time, the 60s and 70s. Meditation is a valuable skill for developing proficiency in all of the branches of crystal gazing and spiritual skills in general. It's very hard to do magic or any kind of spiritual practice if you're unfocused and if you're on Facebook and tweeting and twittering every 5 minutes. Now, meditation is not hard to learn, but it takes constant and dedicated practice. And one of the practices that really focuses on chakra work is Kundalini yoga. And Kundalini is believed to be a very powerful force lying mostly dormant, coiled in a triangular area in the root chakra, specifically in the sacral bone. And if you're curious about such matters, it's said that Kundalini has exactly 3.5 coils. And some yogins have described Kundalini as the force of pure desire. It's unconscious, instinctive, and fuels the libido. So there it is down there in the root chakra. Now, the goal of Kundalini yoga is to awaken this dormant energy, which has been described as a serpent by a man named Avalon, and raise it up along the central channel through each of the remaining 6 chakras, energizing and awakening each one along the way. So as you do this, you have these powerful mystical experiences, and you have these spiritual abilities. when the serpent is raised to the highest level, to the crown chakra, you experience bliss, higher awareness, and these indescribable spiritual connectivities, enlightenment. You raise your consciousness, and back in those days, people were going to India to study with gurus, and that was the thing. That's what the Beatles did. They went to India and studied with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. Now, various means are available to the student for awakening Kundalini. Yoga is probably the most well-known. Kundalini yoga awakens the serpent through meditation and asana, or the practice of sitting still for long periods of time. Asana can involve the cross-legged position, standing on your head, lying on your back. Vipassana meditation is an example where you sit cross-legged in a stable, relaxed position, your arms relaxed on your knees and one hand supported by another. There's a form of transmission of Kundalini where a master transmits it to his pupil. It's a temporary thing. You get a flash of it just so you know what you're aiming for, and then it goes away. Pranayama breathing, which is a yogic breathing, you one nostril to the other, or the chanting of mantras. Now, there are pitfalls, and the road to spirituality contains pitfalls. Kundalini can sometimes be awakened spontaneously by meditation or through accident or trauma, and if this happens too rapidly, before the student's fully prepared for the experience, a number of severe psychological and physical symptoms may develop. Feeling you can be disgusted or apathetic toward society and people. You can have spasms, itching, tingling, surges of energy coursing through your body. Intense heat and cold, hallucinations, hypersexuality, undersexuality, just go impotent. Intense mood swings, headaches, your blood pressure can go up, your heart can develop arrhythmias, emotional numbness, sharp pains, sensitivity to light and sound and touch, go into trance states, out-of-body experiences, disrupted sleep patterns, loss of appetite, or conversely, with those energy spurts, constantly craving food, you can have euphoria. These periods where you just feel infinite love and connection to everything and transcendental experiences, this may not seem bad, but if you're not prepared for it, it can freak you out. In fact, this has been called the Kundalini syndrome, and it can also occur through over-practicing any form of intense meditation before you're ready. This is why I tell people, if you're going to study meditation, get a teacher. Don't try it on yourself. Now, there's been a body of literature from the psychiatric community. Many of the authors of whom practice Kundalini as well as other meditation that caution, now get this, that advanced forms of spiritual awakening could be mistaken as acute psychotic episodes by psychiatric professionals who are not conversant with the specific cultural standards. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, enlightenment may be indistinguishable from madness by the uninformed. There will be, in the DSM-6, a new diagnosis, enlightenment psychotic disorder. I predict this, just as sure as I'm sitting here. So take it very easy if you decide that you want to awaken the serpent Kundalini, or if you want to practice any form of intense meditation. It's very important to get a teacher. Next week, we're going to go further into this. I think next week it's what we call crystals, and more crystals. We're going to examine all sorts of crystals and the effects on the chakras, the healing qualities, and also the use of crystals and crystal balls in the four branches of Claude Conlon's projections. Thank you. Do show up and drop in and see us. I'm John St. Germain. This is the LMC Radio Network. If you're not at the Rootwork Festival, the Hoodoo Heritage Rootwork Festival, do drop in and listen to us. And good night, everybody. And thanks for dropping in.